Welcome to Safety Spectrum, your environmental health and safety connection. This program is a presentation of the Michigan Safety Conference. For almost a century, the annual conference has provided credible educational opportunities and valuable support to the safety and health practitioner by offering 120 instructional programs, along with exhibits highlighting the latest in safety equipment, instrumentation, and demonstrations. To learn more about the conference, please find us at MICH safetyconference.org.
Welcome to Safety Spectrum. I'm your host, Sheila Ide. This program is sponsored by the Michigan Safety Conference, which has been bringing training to EHS professionals for over 90 years in Michigan. Our topic today is assessing hazards using wearable technology with our guest, Tom West. In other words, before people get hurt. What a concept. I think it's a timely or just-in-time conversation to have.
Tom is Vice President at Make You Safe, as well as being Senior Certified Human Resources Professional and a Certified Occupational Safety Specialist. Over the years, Tom has held executive leadership roles with many companies, providing learning and development tools, technology, and service. Tom has also been a college professor for 28 years, Sir Professor, and he teaches management, marketing, and small business entrepreneurship. I think I'll just call you Tom, Professor. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sheila. Pleasure to be with you and grateful for the invitation.
Okay, what did you think was missing when measuring risk factors and hazards in the workplace? We've been doing this for years, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. In fact, I think a good opportunity to start with a little bit of a story. So Make You Safe was founded in 2016. And the CEO and co-founder is a very close friend of mine, Gabriel Glynn. Gabe had just sold the software company and started a podcast called the Advanced Manufacturing Podcast. He was going out in the state of Iowa, where we're located, and talking to founders and families of 100-year-old manufacturing companies that have transformed themselves over time. Gabe's entire family had worked in manufacturing. And one day he was out doing that, stopped in to see his dad, who happened to be a safety manager at a facility with, I think, 12 or 1,500 employees that he was responsible for. And he was going to take his dad out to lunch. And it turned out to be not such a great day for his dad. OSHA showed up and was conducting an inspection to investigate a hearing loss claim. So lunch was off, but Gabe, being smart guy he is, started to follow the OSHA inspectors around and ask an awful lot of really good questions that were in the vein of, why do we wait until an incident has occurred or a claim has already happened to investigate the contributing factors that led up to that incident or that injury? And that, put us on a path that now we describe, wouldn't it be great if we could forecast risk now like we do weather, right? If you remember being in the Midwest just a few years ago, when I was younger, we would get last minute warnings about, tornadoes being possible this afternoon, if we were lucky.
Now, usually as you saw the funnel clouds over the horizon, right?
That's right. I mean, that's how it was described, right? If you hear a train, go to the basement. But now we get, a week's worth of advance notice Saturday afternoon. Conditions may be favorable. So we're adopting kind of the same practice. We've now created wearable technology. I happen to be wearing one today, an armband. About the size of a matchbox that fits into a holster worn on the upper arm. And it carries numerous IoT-enabled sensors, right, that collect a lot of data about risks and hazards and send that in real time to safety leaders so that they can see these leading indicators of potential risks and incidents and address those proactively. So that's a little bit about how the company was formed and the thinking that led up to this. none of us were safety professionals. I've not worked as a safety professional. I'm an HR guy, college professor. I've dabbled in risk management, certainly have led and grown companies before, but being located here in Des Moines, I think gave us access to an awful lot of organizations, manufacturing companies. I think we have over 6,000 manufacturers in the state of Iowa. And the other nice thing is a lot of access to workers' comp insurance carriers and agents and brokers. So we were fortunate to get an awful lot of feedback and input from them and a lot of traction early on. And I think the timing was right for our solution being able to positively impact organizations, keep costs down, and make sure that everybody goes home safely at the end of each day.
So I'd say it's safe for me to assume that you believe the health and safety world was relying too much on what's already happened. And that's how they track things. And most insurers are the same way.
Sure. Isn't that kind of a notorious thing about safety? I mean, there's heavy reliance upon lagging indicators, things that have already occurred. In fact, it's unfortunate, but often people are paid based on those lagging indicators, right? How the records show that things didn't happen. So TRIR, recordable incident rates, or days away. There's, I think, a shift in organizations to begin looking for causes and correlations, and when conditions, again, are becoming favorable for, or patterns are emerging. You know, you've spent a lot more time in safety than I have. For every one of those people who shows up in the safety leader's office and says, I had a slip and I think I hurt my wrist, there were probably several people who had exactly the same thing happen to them, but just didn't experience an incident. So that's what we refer to as leading indicators. Those near misses, good catches, those things that happen that should be viewed as predictors. So that you
oftentimes the person who has the actual injury has probably had things leading up to it as well, not just other people, but that person himself before it becomes an accident. I think there was a lot of government push to people to provide statistics and basically measuring what has happened, though it does seem like the federal government is getting a little more intelligent about safety and health management systems and that sort of thing. So this does seem to be a timely item to be putting out there.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'll even say on our journey, just a couple of years ago, I was fortunate to have an invitation to go to Washington, D.C. and sit on a panel at the Department of Labor where OSHA was holding a public forum on and really getting everybody's feedback and input, but on how to build standards around leading indicator data. And what will probably happen is both will become important and there will be standards for both. Though tracking things that have occurred won't go away, but then finding ways to track those near misses, observations, engagement and participation, leading indicator data points that can be easily mined out of an organization that have predictive value and can become very, very important in keeping people safe.
So is that how it led to the development of the Make You Safe technology?
No, that was just a couple of years ago. I think it's, at every step of the way, we're moving awfully fast around here. But at every step of the way, we have been fortunate to have good people around us and partnerships and, customers who are willing to pilot with us and give us an awful lot of feedback and input. Our trajectory has been quite impressive. For anybody who can see us on screen, you might see behind me several of pieces of hardware being displayed on the wall. We've gone through five generations of hardware that we've created and researched and developed and engineered. And that led us to last year scaling up manufacturing of a product and bringing it into the marketplace. So it was a challenging year during COVID. We weren't able to get out and do as many installations as we would like because organizations were dealing with their own challenges and managing, stopping the spread. which was hard for us all. But things are opening up now. We certainly.
What type of companies seem to jump on the bandwagon first?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will say that early on we had a lot of organizations that were looking for us to be an innovative solution that they could pilot and experiment with. So there were early beta tests in manufacturing facilities and even on construction sites. And then we did a final round of paid pilots with partners in 2019. We've partnered with, one of the things we learned was insurance companies, workers' comp insurers, have you know, large teams of people that are specialists in safety, and they want to deploy those teams and those resources to help their policyholders, ergonomists and industrial hygienists and safety specialists. And we provide, in their eyes, a tool that gives them access to data so that they can focus their efforts on helping policyholders. So again, being in Des Moines with several insurance companies here, allowed us access and opportunity to talk with insurers, and we have a few of them that are partnered with us, even insurer that is an investor in the company. So
it does make sense, because their loss control people are always looking for tools to give to the employers to avoid accidents. So this fits right in.
Sure. Or, you know, being able to understand where further, more sophisticated testing might be useful or could be deployed. Is helpful to them. So we're doing business with, you know, direct end user industrial organizations, as well as insurance companies, carriers, agents, and brokers. And the best fit for us really is manufacturing, logistics, warehousing. We've got an awful lot of traction in food packaging and food processing, even fixed location construction sites where there are large building projects going on. And the reason for that is we're not really a lone worker or remote or field worker solution yet. That's kind of an evolution that we'll get to. But rather, when workers come to a facility, a building, a factory to do their job, and they're on site, even a construction site all day long, that's a good fit for us. That's how our technology is set up to work currently.
Well, then it kind of leads into the next question of what kind of data is being tracked with your devices?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to show something on screen here for those who can see in just a moment. So we've created a wearable technology, wearable device that is worn in an armband worn holster. And for those who can see, you might find this helpful, kind of a little infographic. There are numerous sensors that gather data in real time and send that to our cloud platform that we call Make You Smart, where we're able to do analytics on that data. And then it shows up in a software dashboard, even on a smartphone, for safety leadership. I kind of like to talk about this in terms of four general categories or types of data that we're collecting. So first would be data about environmental conditions. Anybody who works in a facility knows better than I do that environmental conditions are constantly changing, and two workers that are just feet away from each other might be experiencing completely different, dramatically different environmental exposures based maybe on what side of a machine they're standing on. So we're collecting things like heat exposure, heat index, temperature and humidity. We're monitoring air quality on the device. We're monitoring light levels, ambient light, no light or low light levels, the kind of things that can impact fatigue, have an impact on productivity. We've got a microphone in the device that acts as a full noise dosimeter. So in accordance with OSHA guidelines, we're monitoring sound levels in multiple octaves, and then we're able to calculate the total time weighted average for each worker from on their arm based on what they're experiencing. So that's almost like having an industrial hygienist on your arm, monitoring those environmental conditions.
Can they be that precise, Tom, where they can actually give a dose average?
Absolutely. Yes, they can be. So we generate notifications when workers get to 80% of their daily allowance. Then we generate another one at 90%. And, you know, often we're at work in organizations where safety leadership is doing a great job. They think they have an excellent hearing conservation program, right? This is 100% hearing protection required environment all of the time. And after just a couple of weeks of use, we see maybe just a handful of workers that are exceeding their daily allowance, their time-weighted average for the day of sound within the first couple of hours of their shift. So it may cause that safety leadership team acting proactively and preventatively to question whether or not the hearing protection that those workers are provided is adequate, or do we have to give them a different rating or maybe double up on hearing protection for some people. So that's a good example of a leading indicator that may be prioritized by safety leadership and acted upon before there's ever a claim or before there's an injury or an incident. Maybe there's something that we can derive from the safety intelligence and do something based on data evidence.
Now, you mentioned that ergonomics or slips, trips, and falls can somehow be tracked. How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. So second would be potentially hazardous human motion. If you're familiar with what an accelerometer is, that's what we're using in our small armband device. The accelerometer in your smartphone is what tells it to change the orientation of the screen based on what, you know, how you're holding your phone. And that's because gravity is acting upon it and it's sensing that difference in position. So we're doing the same thing in a very, very small, you know, about the size of a matchbox piece of technology that workers wear on their arm. We're including accelerometers. And a natural starting place for us was, can we tell what a slip looks like? And can we tell if that's different from a trip? By the way, it is. It's a very, very different movement and emotion. What does a fall look like? And we've evolved now to being able to identify those things with a high confidence level into understanding when motion is becoming repetitive. What do subtle movements look like? Twisting and turning and lifting, those kinds of things. When we see a pattern or see someone who is routinely utilizing a large amount of force over time to do their work, we can start to assemble a picture, not just of, you know, there have been three slips in the loading dock area in the last 4 days. Maybe I should go have a look and see what's happening in that area. But we can look at worker physicality. We had a recent example where one company deployed Make You Safe in four different sites, four different locations. And after a couple of months, they realized by looking into the data historically that one site was working much, much harder than the other three. As a matter of fact, it was 750% more effort being expended at one site as compared to others. So is that an opportunity for effective safety leadership team to want to understand what's being done differently? Is there a training issue? Are they just more productive? Are they working harder? Are the other three sites working smarter? Is there some long-term effect? Cumulative trauma is what it's referred to. Is there some long-term effect to people working with that much effort and energy in getting their job done? Are there things we can do, like maybe raise boxes up off the floor onto platforms to keep people from bending over as much, or strains or exertions, those kinds of things? And you and I had talked previously, Sheila, and I think I gave you an example, which is really kind of illustrative. We were at work at a facility and one worker was identified, usually within the first few days this kind of thing happens, as working with an unknown high force motion. So it wasn't a slip or trip or fall, but we saw repetitive high force motion. We noticed we told the safety leadership team, they noticed too. They went and had a conversation with that worker. And he said, well, you guys know, I do my job every day by pulling around this very heavy tool cart from station to station. And I just hadn't told anybody yet, but two of the casters are broken on my tool cart. They need to be repaired. So we didn't create technology to identify bad casters on a cart, but that's the kind of movement, high force movement and repetitive movement that we're able to identify, give notification to. We may not even know exactly what it is, but with more data, more things become identified, and safety leaders can hopefully address that risk, that hazard, and minimize it, mitigate it, so that there isn't long-term effect.
Well, how does that work? I mean, a middle manager or supervisor, is this one more thing they've got to keep track of and interpret, or has this really been helpful?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We our mission here is to use technology and data to make the world a safer place. And we say that there are two things really we're trying to achieve. One is identify hazards that are useful, that have value, and do that economically, inexpensively. Secondly is to make them immediately actionable for the safety leader, to make their job easier, help them be more effective and efficient without giving them just another thing to do, Sheila. That was a very, very good comment. So we've provided, and everything is inclusive. We provide a software platform that we call Make You Smart. Even on a smartphone screen, a safety leader who's walking a factory floor has access in real time to the notifications that they've chosen to receive. They get to opt into things that are high priority for them. One of the things we're going to talk about here is the ability to record a voice memo. It has to be intentional, but there's a button on the device. A worker can push and hold that button down and speak into the device and record up to a 15-second voice memo. That's intended to increase near miss reporting and good catch reporting, frontline observations. In our estimation, if somebody is trying to tell safety leadership something, it deserves your attention. So that's a high priority notification. And in real time, again, just a few seconds, it comes to the safety leader's dashboard as a playable audio file. And you also get the voice to text translation there, but they can opt.
You know, we're both people. We in HR and safety, we talk to a lot of folks. We try to get the story. We try to get what's going on. And why do you think people are so hesitant to report something that is in hindering their job or causing them a problem? What is it where this device seems to do it anonymously? It sounds like almost.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And one I've been working on and thinking about for several years now. There's very, very little research, but there is some that shows as near miss and good catch reporting goes up, or as a structured near miss reporting program is implemented over time, incidents and costs go down. I think that's definitely what we're seeing. We provide that communication tool that is one way, one directional. It's not a two-way communication device. It's not required, but it's one of the recommendations we make to organizations using Make You Safe. Find opportunities to positively reinforce when people leave you a voice memo trying to tell you about something that they noticed. So we hear things like, I'm back here in a dark corner of the warehouse and there's a stack of material on a pallet that looks like it's gonna fall over. That's exactly the kind of thing I wanna say. Sheila, thanks so much for leaving me that voice memo. Really appreciate it. Didn't know about that. It's already been taken care of. We restacked that material.
Is this similar somewhat to behavior-based safety and the observations? I think you kind of made reference to that in passing, but it's the same idea.
Yeah, it can be. We want to change behavior, change safety mindset, and influence safety culture, right? Every safety person has probably seen the safety triangle or the safety pyramid. At-risk behaviors lead to serious injuries and fatalities. And we want to prevent the things at the top of the triangle from happening. So let's mitigate as many of those at-risk behaviors as we can. Often with a behavior-based safety program, I've seen that reduced simply to telling every employee that we want you to look for examples of your coworkers' behavior. And then, right, that gets reduced to pencil whipping an index card so that right. You can turn them in and go home at the end of the day. So I don't necessarily believe that that's the most effective way to do this. But if you're looking for positive behaviors that you can reinforce as an effective leader, leaving a voice memo that says, you know, machine number 3 on the assembly line is leaking a little bit of fluid and there's a mist in the air and it's creating a slick surface on the floor. That's exactly the kind of behavior I want to reinforce. That's what I want from my workers.
So it's not tied to an individual per se, but it does give an immediate reaction to something. And if you follow up, that, like you say, it builds some morale.
Yeah.
Well, you know, technology like this isn't altogether new. I mean, haven't cars been equipped with the ways that the police can check what your speed was when you had an accident, that sort of thing?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know what's available to the police, but I do know that there are a lot of insurance companies these days that are offering programs and discounts and credits if you will plug a module into your vehicle. Several years ago, you know, they didn't start by saying, we want to monitor you so that we can increase your premiums or drop you as a policyholder. Had they done that, it would have been a flop. Right. But they wanted access to the data so that they could better understand risk. I think we at Make You Safe are very much in the same position. We're early. This is innovative new technology. But there's a lot of need and demand for that kind of risk intelligence that we can provide. And I think in a very, very short time, we'll see that organizations that deploy solutions like Make You Safe that help mitigate risk. It's almost like smoke detectors, right? I mean, you're taking preventative measures so that you can monitor things and eliminate risks and hazards. There will probably be programs and credits and discounts available for that kind of thing. In fact, in the state of Michigan, we're fortunate enough to work with one of your large work comp insurers, AF Group and Accident Fund and United Heartland are partners of ours. So we're at work in several organizations throughout Michigan and throughout the Midwest. And it's because forward-thinking insurers, work comp insurers, have the same mission, hopefully, that organizations do. They want to prevent and predict accidents before they happen and keep workers safe. So we're a tool that helps do that.
Well, it leads into the next question. How is the wearing of an armband and being tracked somewhat? How do the employees feel about this? Is that a tough sell?
That's a great question. I really appreciate you asking. It's one of the significant things that we've chosen strategically to do, I think, that makes us different. So we have a high degree of concern for worker privacy. There are no sensors that are pointed inward looking at the worker. We're not collecting anything that's personal or biometric or HIPAA covered. Instead, the device that a worker wears is looking outward into the environment for things that are happening around them or exposures, things that they're experiencing. In addition to that, we're not continuously tracking workers. There's no button you can push to see where Sheila is right now. We don't care how many times somebody's gone to the break room today. If they slip in there, that's the kind of indicator that gets detected. And you could almost think of it as dropping a pin on a floor plan map of a facility. We want to see where those indicators are happening, but we're not tracking people. We're not giving any feedback to the worker. There's nothing, you know, that buzzes or goes off on their arm. And that's an approach that offerings in the space of wearables advocate. We don't believe in that at all. I don't think, you know, people respond long-term very well if you're constantly telling them they're doing something wrong or they have to change. Instead, we provide intelligence to safety leaders and we let them decide what they want to talk to their workers about. So we've had You know, there's always that question. I think I saw a study that said 82% of people who have a wearable of some sort, think of like a Fitbit, are concerned about privacy. And I think that's very natural, right? What is this thing doing? Is this creepy? Is it monitoring me? Who has access to this data? On the other hand, we're in a world now where data is being generated about everything. Data is important. And, young workers, I think I've seen in another research study, 76% or something on that order of young people in the workforce want technology that helps them do their job better. So we're on a path where we may be early, but this will probably become ubiquitous.
I actually read a news article, I don't know, a couple of years ago, where a lot of the soldiers in our forts were wearing the Fitbits or tracking their exercise or what have you, and they were being tracked by others that we did not want them to be tracking how many people or where they were. It is possible that, I mean, information is out there whether we want it to be or not. That's the unfortunate truth.
Yeah, and we do this in a way that is ensures data security, data privacy. We're not, you know, collecting anything that's personal. I mean, the data that's being transferred is things like temperature levels and sound levels and, you know, a little bit of motion data about a slip and where that slip happened. We do make it possible for somebody to record a voice memo, to record a near miss or a good catch, but that's the extent of the data that we're sending. So it's not anything that's creepy. And there are those organizations that have tried to introduce something, you know, that will buzz on your arms and tell you how to move more productively so that you can be efficient. We're not attempting to do that at all. There's nothing here that's intended to hold workers accountable at all. Instead, you could think of this as gathering data so that the safety leadership team can be accountable for dealing with risks and hazards before people have accidents. So even in labor union environments, which we've been at work at for years now, you know, I've been at tables with both executive management and union leadership. And within a few minutes of having this kind of conversation with them about what we do and how we do it and why and what the data can be used for, I've had both experiences where, you know, both sides of the table say, we care about our workers and we want to do this and here's why it's a good idea. Almost an argument breaks out because both sides care about the worker more than the other side.
I think the proof is how you use it. I mean, in a company, you can tell people, but if the proof is that you use it in a positive manner, then eventually you'll get buy-in. And yep. If I understand you correctly, on some of the industrial hygiene issues, it's more of a baseline. It's not considered to be an actual tracking of that person's total exposure. It's more of an indicator that something may be happening, like sure. You said, the noise.
You can almost view us as a diagnostic tool. We're collecting lots and lots of data points and we're monitoring in real time and providing that data. So there's a historical record. But our data would be useful in understanding when thresholds have been crossed. We can generate a notification for that and would be useful in understanding where more sophisticated testing might be conducted, right?
That's what I'm thinking. Full monitoring would have to be done with other instruments. I mean,
even in the example of air quality or sound, right? There are tools, handheld tools that are incredibly expensive that hygienists use. Sound dosimeter that's 360 degrees might be several thousand dollars. Yes. I mean, we're selling a device here for $22 that uses very, very small sensors. Their tolerances, their ranges are very accurate. And to date, we've never had a case where we've really been off with our data. We're usually able to easily identify where conditions would require further testing.
But you wouldn't recommend this for someplace like entering a sewer or in a tunnel where they have to use more sophisticated gas detection equipment, I would
assume. Yeah, well, it's not intended to serve that purpose, no. And those are specialized, right, confined spaces or, mining They have specific things that they're trying to achieve. We're not a man down device. We're not a zone evacuation device that they use in construction. We're not in trying to be a life-saving device at present. Instead, we're a tool that offers an awful lot of monitoring, lots of data that can be useful in non-life-threatening situations to just understand the risks and hazards that are present so that proactive safety leaders can mitigate those risks.
Make decisions on what they're seeing out there, not necessarily tying it to a person, but an area or a risk occurring that they may not even know about.
Yeah, evidence-based decision-making, yes, should lead to.
So why do you think this topic is important now?
I think there are a lot of organizations that are thinking about how to achieve that last tier, right? We've improved our recordable rates, but our workers are important to us. In fact, there's a shortage of workers. How do we create, you know, a more effective safety culture here? How do we make safety mindset more enhanced? How do we demonstrate that commitment to our workers? And how do we find those things since we've worked on the big problems and maybe we've got compliance under control? How do we uncover those things that might have a lasting cost to us or a large cost, right, over time? How do we make sure that we're keeping people safe? So we're a tool that helps them do that. For insurers, how do we, you know, as a work comp insurer, how do we make the transition from being content to write a check to repair and replace, right, things that are broken or to repair people, right? Or in the case of SIFs, serious injuries or fatalities, I mean, they're not replaceable. They may be life-altering, right? An empty chair at the dining room table leaves a lasting effect on family and lives. So are there those things that we can identify that help us in the insurance world transition to a predict and prevent model so that insurers can engage with policyholders proactively to help them keep costs down, help them keep their workers safe. There are organizations in both camps, end user industrial organizations with effective leaders that want to get to a place where they're remediating those things. And there, I think, are forward-thinking insurance companies that realize that'll be the basis upon which they compete in the future.
Well, there's so many factors. We have an aging workforce, and the ergonomics issues are getting larger and larger. And we do have to anticipate that some people are not going to be physically able to do some of the jobs that we have right now.
That's exactly right.
Or they're getting injured sooner or staying out longer based on workers' comp data. So, yeah, we need to do something to change that.
You know, there are a couple other things I would mention, too. I mentioned we've all dealt with this time of, you know, COVID and stopping the spread. And that was a challenge for us, just like everybody else. But we used that time wisely, listening to customers and helping. Well, getting to understand the challenges that they were dealing with, right? If somebody comes into your office, Sheila, and says, I have a family member who's been exposed or diagnosed, now there's a responsibility on leadership, on the organization to know exactly who that worker is coming in contact with. Our tool was already collecting some data that showed that, and we've now introduced contact tracing on demand. And there are, you know, you may think we're through the hard part and COVID's over, but there are states like California that just introduced AB 685, I think legislation is what they call it. And this will continue. There may be other contagions, and stopping the spread through contact tracing is important. That's a capability here. And in addition, one of the things we didn't talk about is our wearable device has the ability to detect proximity of a worker, not only to other workers, right? Worker to worker proximity, but worker to things. So, you know, we're on this journey now, this transformation in industry toward industry 4.0 or smart factories, smart facilities, right? Organizations that want to get data from things. And the missing component of that historically has been, how do we get data from people and see how people are interacting with our smart factory systems and equipment and machinery? And we can do that. And now we're working on projects where we're able to control or restrict access to certain areas based on whose wearable device is present, or make adjustments to machinery based on how many people are there, those kinds of things. So you asked about reasons why this would be timely. There's an awful lot of, I think, compelling reasons, good reasons why we provide something that's extremely economical. We're on par with, you know, a decent set of work gloves. We want to be viewed like PPE, very inexpensive, tens of dollars per worker. But the data that's gathered, typically within days or a couple of weeks, we uncover something that can we can place a value on in terms of a loss that was avoided because of something that was detected and action that was taken by leadership. And the last thing I'll mention is, you and I have talked about this before, safety leaders often have a hard time, you know, justifying their existence, right? How do you calculate the ROI of safety? How do you put a value on keeping something from happening? And our tool in our dashboard, we're tracking, we're tallying those things that are occurring, and we're a place where documentation can occur about what actions over the past month or quarter our safety leadership team has taken. And it becomes really easy to see, here's exactly what we're doing about the problems that we're identifying and the actions that we're taking and the value that that has to the company. So
I think that's the frustration of many safety and health people, is they can't measure the accident that did not happen. But I think you have shown me that you can improve a safety record 1,000%, or at least the dollars spent. So if the back accident that didn't occur that would cost $150,000 might have been prevented under one of these means. So I could say, yeah. I see where you're going next with this whole thing about identifying hazards and trends in real time. I think that's the kicker right there. You know exactly when it happened, where it happened. You can deal with it immediately if you're set up to do so.
So proactive. Yeah, and that's part of what we're endeavoring to do, right? I often say the old days of a safety committee getting together once a month or once a quarter with a box of donuts or a pizza and say, you know, spreading out all the incident reports and saying, let's look at the things that have happened already and try to identify a pattern. I think those are long gone. Now we're able to detect millions of data points in short periods of time, and we can use the power of cloud computing to churn through all of that. We've got robust artificial intelligence and machine learning models. And the intent there is that that does the work for you and provides a notification about a trend or a pattern that's emerging before people get hurt, so that you can do something about it. And you don't have to be a data scientist to understand how to use it. It becomes immediately actionable. Just go talk with the people that this is, you know, that are experiencing this, or go investigate the area, go conduct a site observation.
The way I look at it is, you find things out when you actually physically go and have a discussion with a person on site, and you can't be everywhere at once. So this kind of gives you that advantage of having eyes all over so that you can get to that person who has a problem before it becomes worse.
Yeah, so, you and I are cut from the same cloth.
HR and safety. So have you got any final thoughts, any final words of wisdom for me?
Well, I would just pick up where we left off there a second ago. I think those individual conversations really are the building block of how to create a better safety culture, how to create, you know, more participation and engagement. That's the positive side of behavior-based safety, when it doesn't go wrong, right? Having those conversations is incredibly important. And all too often, safety leaders don't know what to say, how to say it, right? We're collecting data and providing a notification that from an HR perspective, from a psychology perspective, I would say has psychological safety built into it. You can go to somebody and say, Sheila, the data's showing me something here. Tell me about what you experienced. And that's a safe conversation. You don't even have to think hard about what to say, because you're not coming to somebody and saying, you know, Sheila, come to my office, we have to talk, or there's a problem. Instead, you know, the conversation is, you're experiencing something and the company cares enough that we want to know what it is to figure out if there's something that we need to do to keep you safe. And that has a long-term lasting positive effect.
Absolutely. The key to me is dealing with what's brought to your attention. I mean, if you don't do that, you've lost the whole, whatever
yeah,
you
do. I walked into a lunch tent on a very large construction site to give an orientation to frontline workers. And I got there a couple minutes early recently, and in the back of the tent, I saw a giant bulletin board. And on one side, it said, "You told us," and then a big column of things that employees had told them. And on the other side, there's a long list that says, "Here's what we did about it." And perfect. I knew it was perfect. I knew that we were going to be successful there because leadership valued being told something, right? Getting some intelligence. And they placed a high value on doing something about it and communicating that to their people. And that's exactly what we're doing. We're just using technology to do it.
Taking care of people. What a thought. Yeah. So measuring leading indicators in real time is certainly beneficial to safety and health and to help mitigate risk. We'd much rather celebrate the incident than consider what the alternative is. So I'd like to thank you, Tom. You can contact Tom at their website at makeyousafe.com. And if you'd like to more information about the Michigan Safety Conference or the podcast, please contact us at michsafetyconference.org. Thank you for listening to Safety Spectrum.